Hello, and welcome to today's episode of the Voices for Change radio show, Tracy Schott's program, weekly program, every Tuesday, talking about the how we can end domestic violence and to amazing women who are in the process of just making global change. And today, we are thrilled to bring two amazing filmmakers to the show, Nita Strike and Kelly Devine. They are the execs of the Global Peace Film Festival, and we look forward to having this conversation. So I'm going to throw it over to you.
Hi, everybody. I'm really excited to have Nita and Kelly with me today. I met them both. I actually met Kelly in New York City at a New York Women in Film and Television event in 2015. I had just released Finding Jen's Voice, and we started talking. She was moderating a cool event there, and we started talking. She told me that she was creative director for a film festival, and I should submit my film. And then I did, and ended up meeting both of them in Florida, in Orlando, where they have Global Peace Film Festival. And I was so impressed by the running of this festival. First of all, I was in the first year of starting Reading Film Fest, and I just love the warmth and camaraderie, and the hospitality that you guys provided to filmmakers was unlike anything that I'd experienced before. So that, I really appreciated that. But I also really appreciated your belief in the value of film and creating conversation. And you know, we've known each other now for almost 6 years, and Kelly has been helping me create this Voices for Change movement. She's been very instrumental and keeping it going and keeping me going when I was ready to just throw in the towel about 25 times. And Nina has been very helpful in her work with Global Peace Film Festival as the fiscal sponsor for Voices for Change. So I have this history with these two women and an enormous respect for what they're doing. And so I'd like to just kind of check in with both of you and tell me a little bit about your backgrounds and kind of how you came together. Who wants to start with Kelly?
Okay. Well, first, thank you, Hope, for bringing us all together on this. And Tracy, thank you so much for your kind words. We really appreciate what makes the festival the experience that is so rewarding for Nina and I is this ongoing relationship with filmmakers. It's about the relationships, not just about showing a film. So this is really this is why we do this, so that we can have these longstanding relationships and watch people grow and watch their projects flourish. How Nina and I met a very long time ago. I was an acquisitions executive for the Independent Film Channel. This is back when it was a commercial-free film service. I used to attend lots and lots of film festivals, one of which was the Newport International Film Festival. And that's where I met Nina. And I was, I think I went to that festival at least three times. And then years went by. It's 2006. I had just left IFC because it was in transition to becoming an ad-supported channel, shifting from film to series, to original series. And I was striking out on my own, wanting to scratch various editorial itches that I had about the power and the potential of film. And I was at the Tribeca Film Festival and ran into Nina, who had started the Global Peace Film Festival in 2003. But she was at that moment looking for, not just simply looking for a new programmer for the festival, but really, I think, looking for a partnership in again, growing the full potential of this festival. And we connected again, and it's been wonderful. Nina, thank you for this opportunity all these years.
And thank you for everything that you've contributed to the festival, because it's just, it's been fantastic to have you along for the ride. And again, thank you, Hope and Tracy. It's great to see you. And yes, we, with the Global Peace Film Festival, we wanted to do something. What I wanted to do when I started it was something different than the ordinary film festival. I always considered that the real value of the festival was what came from the screenings rather than what went into the screenings. So, you know, I equated it from the very beginning. I equated it sort of like a flower, like a flower bed where you plant some seeds and you don't know, you just sort of toss some seeds in and you don't know which one is going to grow. And Tracy, yours is definitely one that's blossomed and flourished. So we're so excited to be part of that ride, of your ride.
Well, it has been quite a ride. And quite honestly, I don't think we would be here with any of these things with Voices for Change without your support. I mean, I you know, doing impact producing was not ever part of my plan. You know, I thought I was making a film and I would walk away and make another film and forget about it. But so many things conspired to keep me engaged, not the least of which was all of the were the survivors that I developed relationships with, but also the feedback that I got from festivals like yours, where you know people really said, "Oh my goodness, this is a film that people need to see. This is information that people don't have, and how do we make that happen?" So, you know. Few months after your festival, I picked up the phone and called Kelly and said, "You know, somebody wants me to give them money to." Do you remember that? Somebody wants me to give them $5,000 to help promote my film, and she was like, "Oh my goodness, don't do that." and you know, and it kind of like went, it just morphed into me really self-distributing and then creating this whole social impact campaign that's become Voices for Change. It's really exciting to see how a film can create conversations among people. And one of the things that I've found with my film is even people who work in the space of domestic violence, when they see the film, they have a whole new conversation about the work that they do. And there's something about film. And so you guys figured that out a long time ago in your careers. Tell me a little bit more about how Global Peace Film Festival has started and has evolved into become what it is. How many years are you into it? 15 years?
This is going to be the 18th.
Wow.
It's my 15th as a programmer, because I came in 2006, but the festival started in 2003. That was its first year.
Yeah, the festival started in response to the Iraq War, actually. And I was approached to send my resume to be to run this Global Peace Film Festival that was going to start. There was a philanthropist who wanted to do something for peace. He had business interests in Orlando, and that's why it was there. He's actually a New Yorker, and he hired me to run it. Unfortunately, he went out of business literally within months of the first festival happening. So he funded the first festival. And the interesting thing about him is he's a devout Muslim and a conservative Republican. And I'm a progressive Democratic Jew. And so the combination of, you know, when he found out that I was Jewish, he was thrilled, even though a lot of people the Muslims who worked for him were not thrilled. And he was like, "This is what peace is about." And so partly because I really didn't know Orlando at all when he hired me. But because of his politics, it made me think more broadly about how to program the first film festival, how to put it together. And one of the things that really was a foundational idea to me was a friend of mine had been an anti-intervention in Central America activist for a really long time. And all of a sudden he disappeared. And this was in the late 80s, I think. All of a sudden he disappeared. And a little while later, he called me up and was like, you know, where are you? What's going on? And he said, I decided to leave that work because for the longest time, I'd been defining myself by what I was against, and I wanted to define myself by what I was for. And that was really my inspiration behind how I started to put the festival together. I didn't want to be an anti-war festival or an anti-this, anti-that festival. I wanted to be a festival that showed a vision of what peace could be and how peace is relevant to everybody. And in very different ways. And how do we present that? And so it was a much more holistic view. And also I had this flower bed idea about, you know, growing activism, and found that Central Florida was, you know, here, this was the first year of the Iraq War, when I would go down if there was a vigil for peace, you know, maybe 20, 30 people would show up and they would be excited about that. The community has grown so tremendously, and I hope that I think that the festival has been part of that growth of people wanting to talk about issues when, you know, back in 2003, you know, people would not talk about issues at all. They would really shy away from it, even talking to people from other organizations that worked on the same issue. So how do you create that community? And that was really the beginning. And when Kelly came in, what I loved about her perspective on programming is that it's not what we like that, you know, that we're programming about. It's what our audiences will respond to, and how listening to the community is the most important thing. And that's been a partnership that she and I have developed over the years, where I have my ear to the ground with a lot of different community partners. And before we start programming, I start feeding Kelly information about this group is doing this, and this group is looking at another issue. And so she looks for films that are, you know, that will fulfill their organizational needs.
Well, you know, Kelly, it's that kind of programming has inspired me. You know, when I program Reading Film Fest, and I see a film come through that's about a beekeeper or a fly fisherman, I know that those films are going to resonate with our community, because those are interests, as we're in a agricultural community, and we have one of the premier fly fishing streams in the country that comes right through Reading. I know that there are people here that will respond to that. And yeah, you really kind of inspired me with that. And you've taken a broader look at what are peace films, you know, what films talk about peace. Can you talk a little bit about how you get there?
Sure. Well, I think it starts with, to tee off of something that Nina said, instead of it being what you're against, it's what you're for, right? So we really think of peace and look for models of it in, not in some kind of, as peace as being some kind of utopian vision or an absence of conflict. Instead, we actually embrace it. And I think when you talk to people who work in the fields of conflict resolution and, you know, in conflict mediation, it's about a framework of respectful, nonviolent conflict mediation. You know, it's about what I think are really very practical ways to make our lives together more impactful. I think we try to model ways to go through life that, you know, bring respect and dignity to everything that you do and to your interactions with people. And I think in terms of the real, you know, the real practical connection of using a film, connecting it to a community organization who's working on a particular project, is to look for models. A lot of the problems that we face or that we see on the news seem completely overwhelming. But if we can find an aspect of it where people can participate, where they can use their own agency to contribute. Again, this is, you know, what are you for, not what are you against, right? How can you go in and, you know, if there's a solution, instead of just arguing about who's right or who's wrong about a particular issue instead, what can we all chip in together and do? So we're always looking for those films. And so I think what was, just to tie it back to your film, Tracy, what I found so remarkable about your film was that you were offering a framework for people to understand the root causes. Instead of finding blame, instead of finding an argument, you were actually offering a way through the situation to get to a healthier point on the other side, right? And I remember when we had your screenings, and Nina, again, doing her fantastic work with the community groups, we had survivors, we had people from shelters, that I did have to lean, you know, and paraphrase that old song, you know, when your Q&As were going, I had to say, you guys don't have to go home, but you have to go somewhere else. They're closing up. And I remember your group moving en masse and sticking with you and continuing that conversation for each of your screenings. And that's when I knew there was something that was resonating with people, because far too many of the films that deal with intimate partner violence really just talk about how the damage that it causes, but don't acknowledge that there are ways to, you know, to form better, healthier relationships so that you're not at that crisis point to begin with, that there are ways to recognize what the signs are, and that they are not necessarily the kind of stereotypical things that we've been led to believe by movies of the week or, you know, the Lifetime kind of, you know, damsel in distress. I loved in talking to you more deeply about how you came to frame the film that you created, you know, that you were concerned about this overly paternalistic view of intimate partner violence, that, you know, and also that we don't want to have good guys and bad guys. We want to have healthier relationships. And that's what's really, you know, I think that's, again, Nina, you had put it so well. What do we want more of? Not what, you know, what are we against? And so that was the promise that I had seen in your film, that your film provided a view to having more respectful, mutually beneficial relationships that were healthy for everyone.
Well, thanks for that, Kelly. I know that, you know, some of the issues that Global Peace Film Festival addresses are more what people think of in terms of peace, right? And I think that people don't necessarily think about intimate partner violence as an issue about peace, but it really is, and it really is a global issue, and that just kind of goes back to the whole idea that intimate partner violence is a private affair, you know, it's private business, and instead of global. And when one in three women globally are physically abused by their intimate partners, you know, that's a global problem. That's more people than are affected by war. So I appreciated your perspective about what issues are, you know, are part of the Global Peace Film Festival. And I know there are other common issues that come up in the festival. Environmentalism comes to mind. What are some of the other issues that you guys have dealt with through the years that kind of keep coming back to you?
Before answering that question directly, one of the things that I've always enjoyed when particularly, you know, the reporters say about the festival is that they're so surprised at the programming. And I've always loved that because we don't want to be, you know, just the peace people, you know, it's not just that. It's, you know, what does make people's lives more fulfilling? So it is, you know, yes, environment. We've had films about hospice volunteers, which was something that people would, you know, were like, we never would have expected to see this in a peace film festival. We've had science fiction films, and we looked for comedies a lot because peace doesn't have to be serious. Actually, you know, laughing is one of the best ways to break down barriers. So, you know, it sort of, we know it when we see it kind of thing, but the range of issues is as broad as we're able. So Kelly, if you want to.
Yeah. We really do try to rescue the word peace because I think it's been trapped. It's been put on a bit of a pedestal. Yes. And yes. Oh, we had a terrific documentary about a peace sign.
yes.
But we do want to, we did want to kind of rehabilitate it from being again, you know, this kind of utopian, unobtainable.
The hippie image.
Right. And instead look towards, peace as a strategy for getting the most out of life.
I love that.
And another thing that we do in addition to the films is we have a kindergarten through 12th grade peace art exhibit. And we give, you know, it's throughout the Orange County public school system, whichever art teachers want their kids to draw pictures about the topic of peace. We've had subjects like color your world with peace, or what does peace look like to me? Things like that, and let the kids' imaginations flow and share their visions with us. And you know, it starts from that young age. So,
in fact, Nina, behind you, over your shoulder,
this is the calendar from the Peace Art Exhibit last year. We have a jury of art teachers, and they decide on the best work in each of three first, second, and third place in each of four age categories. And the winners go into this calendar. The kids get copies, their parents get copies, their teachers right. get copies, and then we use it for marketing purposes and we sell some. So
that's great. I love that you're getting you know, young kids engaged in the festival. And what a great way to do that.
Well, and one of the other things that makes our festival unique is that we have one of the youngest audience demographics that you'll find, because we're not really a festival that caters to film lovers and film buffs. We have these, again, this is down to Nina's terrific efforts in the community. We forged these wonderful relationships with educational institutions, we have a UCF board member, we have the University of Central Florida, we work with Valencia College, and we have a really deep, long-running relationship with Rollins College that includes a class that is dedicated for the festival. Nina, you want to tell a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's called Media, Peace, and Justice, and we've managed, you know, over the years, we managed to actually curricularize the festival at Rollins College. So we show a lot of the films on their campus, and this course basically looks at the issues around media, peace, and justice. And the students in the class have to adopt a film and, you know, learn about it, learn about the issues, work with the, you know, meet the filmmakers. And then they're part of their coursework is to promote the film and get, you know, get people to come to see it. And so that actually started in 2009. So it's, you know, it's been more than 10 years. You know, it was piloted for a couple of years, and then to get it onto the formal curriculum, there has to be a year off while it, you know, while the results are assessed, and it's now on the curriculum as a community engagement course at the college.
That's very cool. And again, it's kind of taking, you know, the idea of a film festival into a whole nother realm of impact on people, and especially young people.
We have relationships with high schools as well. We bring filmmakers to different high school classes to meet with the students, to talk to them about their work and about making documentaries for change. And the film, you know, filmmakers love to do that, and it's and the students just really love to do it. And we get a lot of high school volunteers for the festival, as well as college volunteers, of course. But you know, we have a lot of volunteers from high schools who are just, you know, who do it for credit as well.
I love the just the kind of the broad strokes you guys take in terms of helping people rethink about a film festival. I'm curious to hear your thoughts about the impact of film on the media. And, you know, it's one of the reasons I did Finding Jen's Voice was because I was so frustrated and angry about how the media covered domestic violence. And so it's kind of one of the things that I took on, you know, in the film. And I'm wondering if you've seen other films do that as well, where they're kind of really talking about how the media can play in this field and make things better.
Well, certainly, I can take it in this respect, that one of the ways in which we choose among films is to avoid polemics, is to avoid something that is just trying to make an argument for argument's sake, if you will. And while there are films like yours that in examining a particular issue may have touched upon the misconceptions that are you know, widely accepted or that are repeated, or in the main, we really look for work that gets people out of their chairs and working towards something. Whether that's something, just to tie back to your question about how widely we conceive of peace, we almost always every year, I would say for at least maybe 10 years, have a film about mindfulness. About that kind of inner peace that people need to work on, and, you know, all the way to global movements. So it's really those models. You know, we are looking for opportunities to get people involved and experiencing things with their neighbors. In the previous round of questions towards the end that Nina was talking about our involvement with the schools, I think probably some of the outcomes and the consequences of this festival really come from the stories about young people who have come to the festival maybe because they were going to get extra credit by seeing a movie, and walked away changing their major, starting nonprofits of their own, you know, really reevaluating how they wanted to move forward in the world. And so for us, it's while that kind of critique is really important, for us, what we are really looking to catalyze is that positive action.
Just to address a little bit about the media, One of our community partners is the Central Florida Association of Black Journalists. And at the festival for many of the years that we, since we started that panel, which was many years ago, they do just a discussion about, you know, how the media impacts on their work, how an issue is portrayed in the media that doesn't redound back to, you know, to their community. So sort of a, you know, one of the discussions I've always loved that they've done is when there, you know, when there's a community, a problem in the community, whether it's, you know, a lot of arrests of Black youth, they'll analyze the press coverage of it. That's not a, you know, that hasn't been a film. I think we might have had a couple of films that have talked about.
Yeah, remember the two short films that we had?
One, oh, right, yes.
Right.
Yes.
We mm-hmm. had this program of, one was a young African-American woman, I believe from Baltimore, who yeah. was examining the way the press was portraying violence in that community. Gun violence. And the other film was a woman from Texas who was really asking the question. She was a member of the local press. There had been a mass shooting at a church. The national media descended, created their narrative, took their sound bites, and then left. And she was really examining what's left behind, who pays attention to the nuances of the community, who pays attention to, you know, the grief of that community and how they work through it. So we had those two filmmakers as part of that panel that year. And that was a really fascinating panel that particular year.
Yeah, that was one of the panels where we had to sort of move people outside.
Right.
in a group.
Keep talking, but not here.
Right.
Well, so one of the things we were going to talk about were some of the challenges of having this festival. And one of the things that comes to mind for me is, of course, last year, all film festivals either shut down or went virtual. And you guys had a pretty successful run with the virtual filmmaking. And I want you to talk about that because our listeners and viewers might be interested in finding out how they can participate in Global Peace Film Festival without being in Orlando, Florida.
Well, actually they can participate much more easily than ever before because first of all, we have, you know, the first way to hear about things is our sign up for our newsletter from our website, which is peacefilmfest.org. And we're going to have a virtual festival as well as whatever we can do in person this year, which of course we don't really know what that's going to look like yet. But we do have short shorts online that are free for anybody to watch during the weeks of the festival. We'll have a virtual platform where you have to buy your tickets, but we keep our tickets at a very reasonable price. And they're not set time screenings, so when the films are available, whatever the window that the film is available for, you can watch it 24/7 during that time period. So it's on your own schedule. And then our YouTube channel has a lot of the interviews from the last festival, as well as some of the other programming, some of the other programming that we've done. And we've heard from people who've really enjoyed watching those interviews. So a year ago, Kelly and I would not be doing Zoom. how many of us would have been, but, you know, we've sort of moved into this two-dimensional world. But plan to present a robust festival and want to grow our national and international audience. So we welcome people's participation. Our email for general email box is info@peacefilmfest.org. Welcome your thoughts. And submissions are open now. So if you know a filmmaker, submissions are open through June 17th. So, there's a link on our website
Festival is normally in September, correct?
Yes. This year, the basic dates are September 20th to 26th. We anchor around the International Day of Peace, which is September 21st.
Gotcha. And the one thing I would add is that, again, we when we made the pivot to pulling most of our programming online, we tried to make the most of it. And I would say that we found there were many, many things that we had done in reaction to the social distancing needs and the health requirements. But actually, we're going to continue because they worked out really well. You know, formally, the global aspect of Global Peace Film Festival was our efforts through programming to bring the world to Central Florida. But now it's a two-way street. We're bringing Central Florida to the rest of the world, and we really feel it's more of a conversation than it had been before. So we're embracing any of these opportunities to create new relationships, to strengthen our old relationships, and to keep modeling, you know, the kinds of frameworks for living that we, you know, we hope are helpful for people.
Yeah, and I think that I know that you had a lot of really great conversations with filmmakers in your Q&As. And Q&As are always, I mean, it's part of what I used to say, you know, if the filmmakers aren't at a film festival, then it's just going to the movies. You know, the one thing the virtual world did for us all is it's every filmmaker had the opportunity to be there, whether or not, you know, they were, no matter where they were from. So that was really exciting to watch on your film festival, and it's something that I know a lot of us participated in the festival world. Yeah, I think, you know, we've certainly all learned some new skills and learned how to make technology work for ourselves. Does it take the place of, you know, seeing your face, you know, in person and giving you a hug? No, it doesn't. But it's certainly, you know, preferable to no contact at all. I agree that there, you know, it was 2020 was a challenging year for everybody in every industry. So what's next? What are some of the things that you guys are looking forward to? What are some of the successes that you'd like to brag about?
Well, I've always considered, and, you know, I've been an organizer for most of my life, and I've always considered that when you see that spark in one person, it's like the biggest success that you can possibly have. It's not the big things, it's actually the little things that make the biggest difference. And so, as Kelly had mentioned earlier, there was a student who'd made a music video as part of her coursework for something. She was encouraged to submit it. We accepted it. And I encouraged her to come to as much, you know, she was reluctant at first, but I encouraged her to come to as many films as she could and to hang out with the filmmakers and, you know, and everything. The impact the festival had on her was, as Kelly said, she changed her major. Actually, she was graduating, but she decided to, she wanted to be a musician, and she decided she wanted to be a social worker because of her experience with the festival. And she went back to graduate school, and she's now using her music in her social work.
Wow.
And that just really touched me. And she's always, you know, said that it was the festival that gave her, you know, through which she found her passion and her, you know, and her mission in life. And so, you know, I always love that story. Some of the programming has had community successes. You know, we've worked with Amnesty International, and they were doing an anti-death penalty campaign, and you know, they were expecting us to program a film about the death penalty, so, you know, that they could invite their supporters to and meet new people and everything. And Kelly found a film that did not even mention the death penalty, but it was about the penal system from top to bottom, and followed a group of students who sort of looked like the community. The audience at the screenings were a little older because of the location where the screenings were, but it followed these students who were sort of in the same socioeconomic class as our audience, and their response to what they saw in there. Kelly, do you want to?
Sure, sure. The film was made by a criminal justice professor who would take his group of graduate students, the kind of students who are going to step right into the industry, right? Up until this point, everything had been just theoretical and academic. So he would take them on a field trip to low, medium, and high security prisons throughout California so that they actually got to see. And he bookended the field trip that he takes these kids on with a very simple interview that he, you know, he started in the beginning and he brings them back and he asks them the same set of questions, very simple questions. Why did you choose your major? What do you expect to do once you graduate? What was interesting is that the students, for the most part, in the beginning, said, you know, portrayed the world as they understood it as being very black and white, that there are good guys and bad guys, and we're going to be out there protecting the good guys and putting the bad guys away. Through their journey, they come out the other side, and now they're asked those same questions, you know, what attracted you, what do you hope to do? The world's full of gray, and some of them have even dramatically changed what it was they were going to do. One young woman, in fact, who had wanted to work in the prosecutor's office when she was first asked what she planned to do, when she was asked that question at the end, said, now I want to be a prisoner's advocate. Oh, wow. So why the film, and why Nina's bringing it up, is why the film was really important for the mission of Amnesty International was that Amnesty International wanted to have conversations with people and hopefully get them to re-examine and maybe even change their attitude toward the death penalty. So I thought this film was perfect because it presented this opportunity for our audience that I assumed probably had never had any negative encounters with police and who probably, like the kids, when they were first interviewed, thought things were pretty black and white and everything was probably being handled well. You know, would identify with those kids and then would take that journey with them and would change their own minds rather than being lectured to or being made to feel as if somehow they are a part of the problem, which is sometimes what happens with some films like that, right? So, and that is precisely what happened at the end when the Amnesty International...
Amnesty was doing a tour with a
exonerated death row
inmate, former inmate. And, you know, and when he came up, the audience was just peppering him with questions. It was another one of those audience, Q&As that we had to take outside because they just had so many questions for him. And Amnesty, the filmmaker came to the festival, so he was there. And Amnesty was surprised at the choice of film and was thrilled with the response. But the filmmaker, his reaction was, I would never have thought of putting my film in this context and how valuable that was to him. So again, the two-way street, that was a really wonderful opportunity to basically hit it out of the park on both sides.
That's very cool. The idea of a film creating a conversation that has a ripple effect, you know, that's so much about what we're doing, you know, with Voices for Change. You know, it's let's have these local conversations for a global reach. And that, you know, and you guys have gotten this for a long time, that global peace comes. It's starting in Orlando, Florida, you know, I mean, that's just, that's awesome. So I really want to thank you for the work that you've done and for being a part of Voices for Change, both of you. I definitely, like I said, wouldn't be here without you.
And, it's our pleasure.
Yes, absolutely.
And so thank you so much. I want everybody to, is it peacefilmfest.org?
.org, yep.
Yep, and we'll put that up on the webinar when we record it so that everybody can find you. And I encourage filmmakers out there to submit your films if they have, you know, even if you don't think of it as a peace film, you know, it might be the right film for global peace. And it's certainly a wonderful experience as for a filmmaker to come to Orlando, and hopefully people will be coming back to Orlando this year. So thank you so much. I appreciate you being here, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Nina Strike, Kelly Devine, Tracy Schott, Voices for Change. I'm Hope Katz-Gibbs with the Incandescent Network, and we look forward to talking to you next time about another survivor who will be our guest, Lisette Johnson. She is an amazing woman who has an amazing story. And we hope you all check out the Global Peace Film Festival, an amazing, amazing event now online so more of us can attend. So thank you all for being with us today. Have a wonderful, wonderful afternoon. Stay safe.